Welcome to a new episode of the China Flexpat Podcast. And today is a really hot topic. We think about how to build a startup within your company, a corporate startup. And we could not have a better guest than Florian from Germany. Welcome, Florian.
Hello, Francis. Thanks for having me. My name is Florian. I'm German. I'm a mechanical engineer. I'm married in China. I have a son. And I actually came to China 14 years ago without really knowing the country, with not much experience, and started my journey here. And today I am the vice president, a member of the executive board of a German company called Rulamart Automation Technologies, which is actually a group of companies based out of Suzhou with around 1,000 employees, 600 of them engineers, so it's pretty engineering heavy. And beside that, I'm also the chairman and actually initiator and co-founder of a corporate startup called Rulamart Smart Technologies. Just maybe later we will dive a bit deeper into that. It's an exciting story. And beside that, I'm also doing some side hustles. I'm a partner of a venture capital firm with five partners where we invest in early stage startups. I'm also chairman of the DUSA Business Association, a fantastic European business association with around 150 member companies here in Suzhou, and some things like a steering committee in the Sino-German University of Applied Sciences, some little networking things. Yeah, and looking forward to discuss today how my journey went and what we built in the last years. Yeah,
Florian, it's so great to have you, because you represent German engineers. So tell me, what's the value of German engineers?
So the value of a German engineer is, I think overall, German engineers have really a very strong educational basic level already when you come into the company. So this is something you can leverage in China. And I think German engineers have a very strong analytical in a sense and also critical thinking. I think this is very important to really design machines, work with machines and so on. And I have to say there's also maybe it's a weak point of the German engineers, which we are very, very technical focused very often, whereby the Chinese engineers very often are very commercially focused already. So they want to really bring the product to the market. So the combination of both is actually pretty interesting in China.
And how did you apply this when you came to China?
So when I came to China, actually, I came as a typical expat to China for a German machine builder, like have a look in China, what they are doing, and help a little bit to get products to a good quality. And I realized then very soon that in China, there's actually a huge opportunity also for engineers to develop local products for the local market. And this is where I could use my skills, really knowing how to engineer a machine, how to teach Chinese engineers to design machines from scratch. So this was actually my first job then in China. And it helped a lot to work in Germany as a design engineer for 3 years at that time. And all this experience was very helpful, yeah.
And how did you grow into leadership?
In my case, I think I had the pleasure to grow slowly into a leadership role, because when I came to China, actually as a normal engineer without much experience, I could build a small little office for my company at that time and hire one engineer after the other. So I slowly was growing with my team to maybe 10, 15 people in the end, can't recall it exactly. And then I could start a second engineering office in North China and hire another 20 people. And then one office in Malaysia and hire another people. So this is how I slowly was growing with the team. And then what happened actually in 2015, because construction industry was not so exciting, I didn't see so many opportunities there. So I pivoted into automation industry, which was a bit tricky to convince another company that I'm the right guy to do that in a complete new industry where I had no clue about. But I got the chance, and that helped me again to open a new perspective and learn new skills, management skills. So I really grew in this moment again. And then finally, this led me also in the first director role, and then finally also managing director role with the P&L experience. So this was was the second step, and actually there's a third one. Then I also had the opportunity to become a partner in a venture capital firm, which we started actually five or four senior executive people and myself. And from them, I could again learn a lot of things from an investment, from an entrepreneur perspective. So I had the chance to step by step grow my competences in management and also actually the responsibility. So it was pretty good.
And today we talk about the corporate startup and we take the example of your own experience. So when and how does it make sense to build a corporate startup?
I think it makes only in some very special cases sense. Very special is for some companies, they have a certain area of their competences. And if you want to step into a new business, which is not necessarily your core competence, then you need to get a team, you need to other competences, other resources. And this is where it makes sense to look into a new setup like a corporate startup. It could be also like in China. Actually, today, I think a lot of companies are not anymore very competitive in China. Their setup is not very competitive anymore. Their product, maybe they are struggling a bit with an innovator's dilemma. They have a global product, and in China they would need to have maybe a lower price, a little different approach, but they cannot ruin their international setup, their international standing. So there it could make sense to build something like a local competitor as a separate company, as a corporate startup. So there's, I think, several different areas where it makes sense, not in any case, but in some areas it definitely makes sense. And one area where we started our corporate startup was actually software, because software is out of the core competence of a machine builder, and at the same time, a super aggressive environment. A lot of startups, they are all funded. These are all entrepreneurs, all working 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. This is an environment where you would have no chance as a traditional corporate to be successful. So that's why we also chose to go this way in this case.
And how do you attract the talents to go to such an aggressive venture if they also work for a big company? So why should they choose the startup and not the company?
So definitely this is a very special journey. And everybody who goes this journey has a very clear motivation why he is doing that. If you look today at our company, our corporate startup has today 40 people. We started 5 years ago from scratch. So I was the one who built this company from zero. And at that time, I was really 2 years fully focusing on this company and building this team. And I hired the first guys. And actually, they are still here today. And they started at that time as an employee. Today, they are entrepreneurs. So 25% of our company is the shares are in the hand of the people. So this is what they built. They did not come to this company because of money. This was not their motivation. Also, they didn't stay so long because of money. If they go somewhere else, they could earn more. But they always believed into building something exciting, something new, also working in such a new setup. Really, the startup spirit, the whole team spirit behind that. I think people who are attracted by that are really entrepreneurs. And if you give them later the chance also really become an entrepreneur by owning also part of the company, by taking also this entrepreneurial risk, then you attract exactly the right people. And the ones you don't attract is maybe better you don't have them, because they are maybe better at home in a big corporate where they can do a 9-to-5 job. This is really two different worlds, I would say.
So now in this case, you have a startup inside a corporate organization. So how do you make sure that this really works together and that not the two organizations, they fight each other?
In a corporate startup, the corporate has a very special role. It's there for a reason. Otherwise, it would be a normal startup with some money and some entrepreneurs. So it is a customer, for example, or it is a platform for the corporate startup to really develop. So there is no fight, I think, at all. And also the product of the corporate startup should not directly compete if this is really, if the platform of the corporate is needed. So I think there's no conflict between the companies. I think the biggest challenge is actually how you can keep the spirit of a startup within a corporate setup. Because around the corporate startup, there are a lot of people, they are employed by a very successful corporate, they have a lot of allowances, they have a lower working time and so on, they enjoy a lot of benefits. And in a startup, it's the opposite. The guys really need to work 24/7, especially in the first years. They don't have an overtime payment. So they are just in every single item on the paper, they have a disadvantage. So it's very important to let both companies work together, but at the same time also keep the distance and the very clear also different location even for the company, so that this cannot mix, so that the employees in the corporate startup are not trying to get the same benefit, so that you really have this startup spirit all the time. This is, I think, very important to separate that a bit.
But what's the key value of the corporate for this startup?
So in the end, in our case, why we built this corporate startup is because we always had the very clear hypothesis: software is a very essential part of the machines of the future. It will be software-defined manufacturing. Same as you can see it also in other areas. So from a corporate perspective, we decided we need to build our own software solution. But at the same time, we also came to the conclusion that building that as a department inside our corporate with a small little team and with a normal motivation system, we would be not able to compete with aggressive big corporates which have more money, and on the other side also not with startups which are far more aggressive and actually also have a lot of money. So this was the reason why we created such a setup. And in this setup, the corporate is very interested to get a solution from your startup, so it can help you to understand the customer, what is needed, and also give you a platform to test your first products, to get the foot in the very beginning. This is something which is very difficult, if you, especially in our field. We are not a kind of an app which you can download in an app store for a consumer. We are a very heavy B2B product which is used on the shop floor. And if our software is down, actually the production is down because you cannot trace it anymore. You cannot manage it anymore. So there's a lot of responsibility. And this was the big advantage of the corporate helping to open these doors, to give the platform which has the trust of the customer and so on, so that we could start our first projects. And then it's from that involved. So especially in the very beginning, the value is extremely high. And that gave us a big advantage over our competition. And I believe this is the reason why we are today really so successful. And most of the companies which started at the same time actually are out of business. Especially there was COVID in between. There was also last year was a very hard year. There's a lot of headwinds. So we saw all these companies going out of business and we are still around. And I think one reason was really this setup, because we could have a head start in the beginning, which helped us to go through the most difficult time and then go into this mode. And today is no longer that important, that's for sure.
How did you manage this startup growth? What kind of KPIs or what kind of orientation did you set to make sure that the startup is doing what corporate wants and not that they do something else?
So in the very beginning, I kept it very, very far away from the corporate. And to be very honest, the corporate and the goal towards the corporate startup was only me. In the very beginning, there was not many in the corporate who really said that will work and that is the right thing to do. So I was happy that I got the trust to be able to do it. But I did it actually. It was my own idea and I actually also put my own money into that. in the beginning, so I just did it. And then with the time, over time, also when the success came, then also from corporate side, more and more people realized, okay, this is really something which is here to stay. So in the very beginning, we were working like any other startup. So we made a plan, very aggressive. We were thinking how we can convince an investor. We had the first product, MVPs. We tried things out. We stopped things if they didn't work. So it's really a crazy startup story. I'm not sure if you know the startup curve. That's a very famous diagram which shows this journey. We went through that. And I actually, 2020, we were half dead because in the corona crisis, you couldn't get any order for 8 months. So I was really sweating. And same was the team. So they were always thinking, and we need to be successful. They were cash flow driven because this is what financed us. So this was a very typical startup setup. And in such a setup, you don't need to give them a goal. The team is defining the goal, and they're always more ambitious than I am, actually. So that's the nature of this setup.
Can you try to explain what was your role exactly? What's the expectation to you as the founder?
So in the very beginning, I was the first guy, basically. I had the idea, I started this company, and I'm not a software engineer, I'm a mechanic engineer. So actually I had no clue about software. I never did this before, so it was really a venture also for me personally. But what we made in the beginning, we made a great setup. So one party was the corporate having a big share, and another party was actually my venture capital fund with a related software company who helped us in the beginning to get competences, also with an early product which we could use, that we have some cash flows from going to the market and learn. So we built a great ecosystem around this company, basically. And my role was, in the end, to build as fast as possible a team, because I know I have a different role. I'm a CTO in a corporate. I cannot be all in startup guy for a long time. So we said 1 year, I'm all in. I built this team. And then I was just looking for smart people, and I hired smart people, and I brought them together with other smart people, and they developed on them the idea and the ideas and the product. And my role was always just protecting this company from that it can survive, basically, until the product is ready, until we can grow. Also sales, international customer, helping with sales in the end. But that's all my role. I'm a coach, basically. And that's why I'm no longer in the operations. It's a company which can work without me. I'm just as the chairman, basically in charge for the strategy and still to protect this company. But other than that, this is all built by the team.
So if you would write a job description, found a corporate startup, what would it say?
I think it would be the same story like for all other leadership roles. So you need to find a leader and a coach who can build a team. Finished. Who can build a team. And this in combination with a strong vision. You really need to have a big vision. If you start this, cannot be like small little steps. So you really need to think where I want to be in 5 and 10 years, and very ambitious. So it's really a leader, looking for a coach, nothing else. Not a software technology, whatever guy. I think this is not needed. I'm not a software guy. The first guy who I'm hired was also not a software guy. So I think the real first software guy I had was the third or fourth person. So characters, it was all about hiring characters who then built the right competences around.
So if you put it in a nutshell, how do you build a successful corporate startup in the software world?
So first, it needs to make sense. I think this is really the very, very first question. You need to make sure, does it make sense? Is it the right spot? If it is software for a machine builder, I would say yes, because it's out of the core competence. Then the second thing is, need to build a very perfect structure for this company. Every shareholder must have a role, and not the number of shares these shareholders have must fit to their role. Some companies, corporates are too greedy and want to have all shares. That won't work. So it really need to be very balanced. And then the third thing is you need to make sure from day one that you have enough shares, an ESOP program to let your people, which you hire then on the way, really become entrepreneurs, that they really own an essential part of this company. This is absolute necessary that such a company can be successful. There's like the Chinese entrepreneur spirit is a lot of people really have that. And if they get the opportunity in a corporate startup and they know that they can really exponentially benefit if it is successful, then you will really get the right guys. You will really get entrepreneurs. So this is, I think, the three most important things. The rest is then really operations, execution, and so on. But if these three things in the beginning don't work, the whole company will not work. And it will actually also not be a startup, because some companies use that word, but actually what they build is just kind of a department, which is maybe your own entity. But it is not a real startup. Because it has no entrepreneurs, it has no ESOP, no nothing like that. So it must be really a startup.
So now you're in China, you have lots of aggressive engineers to help you who have lots of power and they work hard. So what's the value of a flexpat like you to do this?
I think the value of flexpats, especially in the normal operational roles in companies, in the middle management level or in some professional roles, actually got far less in the last years. I think there in China, companies and even the foreign companies in China, they all have a very strong sense for value add. You need to make sure you add a value, a tangible value, which you really can measure. And as a foreigner, very often you have some disadvantages. Many flexpats don't speak the language very well, some even not at all. Actually, the culture is different. Everything is a little bit different. So there is not so much value to add. But I think right now in the times today, the value add is really also coming from this international background. Because companies like my company, Rulamart, I would say we are a Chinese company even now. We have a certain size. We are German owned, but actually 99% of the people are Chinese. So what these companies lack is if you go then international, there's no competence for international business, for international culture, international language, and so on. So I think this is for many flexpats a big opportunity in the next years to help companies really go international with their business also.
If you would coach your Chinese professionals to do exactly what you just described, to be the international bridge to overseas markets, how would you coach them to do that?
We are in fact doing that right now. So we have a trainee program for Chinese to become international businessmen and women. And the only chance is really putting them abroad. I don't think in China, in today's China, you cannot sit here in an office and learn English and then watch some videos about culture in Europe or something. This will not work. So you really need to select people who are willing to make an international career, and then we also relocate them for a while. We send them to Europe or to Mexico and they stay there for a year, and then they really get a sense, a different perspective also. So it's not so much the language part, it's really the cultural part. As all the foreigners in China also know, this is really a challenge. And I think the same way it works the way around for Chinese, they need to go overseas and change the way they look at everything, at businesses, at people, at communication, and then they will be successful. But this is a long journey to do, and I think most of the time it takes a foreigner to also make this kind of program then really work.
Florian, what are you grateful for if you look back on this great adventure?
I am very grateful that I could come to China and that I found a platform here where I could be successful, and I'm also really that I was helped, let's say like that. And I'm for sure very grateful that I found a fantastic woman here, which is today my wife and actually the mother of my son, which I think also from a professional perspective is really one foundation for my career here, because it helped me to really become also local in the way I think, in the way I can work with other people. So really diving so deep into this culture, then both from a private but also from a business perspective, this is something where I'm very grateful, and I've learned so much over these last years. That's an incredible value.
What's your message to the people listening to this episode, and who should listen to this episode?
I think to this episode, the flexpats should listen who really want to build businesses in China, who really want to not just sit in an office somewhere, do a certain job, try to find to add value as a project manager and so on. I think dare to pivot, dare to propose something like a corporate startup or whatever it is, but dare to propose an idea how to develop a business, how you can develop a business, how you can build a team in China or with your China going internationally. But I think these are the right people who should listen to this episode, who not just looking for a job, but really want to and dare to create something which was not on the roadmap before in companies.
And what's your message to them?
Do it. So think about how you can do things differently than all the others. I believe most of the European companies, and I'm thinking more from the machine builder perspective, are really struggling today in China to really find a good fit here, how to build their business. And there's so much potential actually to come with new ideas how to do that, because it didn't work how it was in the past. So new ideas are absolutely welcome. So this is a very good chance also to propose something like that to your own company or maybe even to a new company.
If there's something you can do to help us, the best thing would be to do this, to share this episode with your friends and to let them listen to this, and maybe they can grow and then they can take the next step in their career. With this, thank you so much, Florian. 谢谢, 再见.
Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Danke, Francis, für das super Gespräch. Vielen Dank. 谢谢, 再见.